the last word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
I'm delighted that we're joined today for the Culture Club on the last word of Today FM by John Sheehan from the Dubliners. And just before we start talking to him, he has released his first ever solo album. It's called Flirting Fiddles, and let's hear one of the tracks from it. He's playing Merino Waltz with Michael Healy for accompaniment. John Sheehan, explain to me, how is that different now in a solo version to the way you might have done it with the Dubliners?
Yeah, well, with the Dubliners, it would have been just fiddle and guitar accompaniment. On that particular recording there, there was a number of members of the RTE Concert Orchestra doing the backing. And Michael Healy, that you mentioned, he was the lead player, the lead violinist with the orchestra on that particular occasion. So that's a full orchestral arrangement as to opposed just to, you know, fiddle and guitar.
And how much did you enjoy doing that?
Very, very much so, yeah. It elevates the tune to a different level when it brings out all those hidden harmonies that are already there within the tune. But it just helps to highlight a hidden beauty in the tune, if you like, you know. And it's a bit of a high playing with people like that.
And have you done that with many other people on the album, that you've come in to reimagine perhaps things that you've done as staples over the years with the Dubliners?
Yeah, there is another waltz with a similar orchestral arrangement, a piece called Autumn in Paris that I wrote about, it might have been 30 years ago or so. And then there's a couple of string quartet arrangements. There's a piece called the Merino Casino, which is an iconic building up there in Merino. And that was a tune that I was commissioned to write about 20 years ago, I think, now. So there's a string quartet arrangement there. And then I've done some duets with Mick O'Brien, the piper, and Colin McInumra, the fiddle player, whom I'm sure you know.
He was on this programme recently when Colin McCann was doing his Culture Club. He nominated him as his current favourite musician to listen to.
Ah, is that right? Oh. I must send Colm a copy of my album.
Get the recommendation from him as well.
Very good, yeah. So it's been a great life, I must say.
Why now the first solo album, given that you've done how many decades it is with the Dubliners? But why a solo album now?
Well, I suppose it's been in my head during the years to do such an album. I've been writing, composing pieces of music over the last 40-50 years, and I always had the notion of putting them all together in an album of my own, but I just procrastinated over the years and concentrated more on getting tunes on Dubliners albums. But now that I've retired, I have a bit more time on my hands, and when it was coming up to me 80th birthday, the kids got on to me and said, "Now, Daddy, this is your time."
How is retirement suiting you? You're not really retired, are you?
Not really, no. I've been busy doing collaborations with other people, and dabbling into other styles of music like bits of jazz and swing. Richie Buckley is on the record doing a swing tune that I wrote called Diminished Swing, which was based on diminished sequences of notes with minor thirds between them all.
Why the fiddle? Why did you get into the fiddle as a young fella?
Well, actually, I started off on the tin whistle in the Christian Brothers School in Marino. We had a wonderful brother there called Brother McCaffrey, and we had him for singing lessons. And he brought in a tin whistle one day and played a tune for us, and we were totally intrigued with the music he could play on such a simple instrument. And then he asked, would anybody like to learn? Of course, everybody in the class, any bit of divement or diversion, everybody was on to learn. So then he said, well, I must get permission from the superior because it's not on the curriculum. So he came back the next day and he said, well, it's okay, we have permission to teach the tin whistle to any boys who are willing to stay back after school hours. So there weren't quite as many volunteers on hearing that news. But yeah, we had some great times in that class. Paddy Maloney of the Chieftains was a classmate of mine, and Liam Rousham, fiddle player, son of Leo Rousham, the piper. So there was a great bit of potential there on those areas.
And then when you started buying music, we ask everyone who joins us on the Culture Club to nominate, if they can remember it or want to remember it, the first piece of music that they ever bought, either a single or an album. What can you remember buying as a young fella?
Records of Sean Maguire, the Belfast fiddler. I never quite finished the story about how I got onto the fiddle, but there was now a body of a fiddle line at home, and I started transferring me a bit of knowledge from the tin whistle onto the fiddle and playing by ear for a while. And then my father said, if you want to learn that instrument, we'll send you to the School of Music for a few years, which I did, and I studied classical music. But Sean Maguire was one of the first great fiddle players that I took notice of. I heard him on the, as we used to call it then, the wireless, heard him on the wireless one night, and I was very excited by the vitality and the energy and the improvisation that he put into traditional Irish tunes. So when I got to the age of buying records and listening to records, Sean Maguire, fiddle player from Belfast, he was one of my first collections.
Well, we have a little bit of music by Sean Maguire. This is called Rodney's Glory. Okay. Maguire there with Rodney's Glory. John Sheehan, did you then try and learn that picking it up by ear, or did you have teachers you could go to in Dublin when you were a teenager?
I busked along with the records that I'd bought and learned a lot of tunes by ear. And having done that, I taught myself initially how to read music, because I got the manuscript notes of tunes that I'd learned by ear and made a connection between what I was doing and the written note. So it's a kind of a reverse process. But then when I went to the School of Music, I learned musical theory and so on. And that finished off part of the education and helped to, I think, going to the School of Music and having that discipline, I developed a good tone, which is very important, I think.
We asked you to nominate your favourite album, favourite band, and you've given us a whole range of choices across a whole variety of styles of music, because certainly you have a very, very eclectic taste. Tell us just some of the favourite albums that you gave us for your list.
I think Fritz Kreisler, the great classical violinist, he was one. Sean Maguire was another. And then the great jazz violinist, Stephen Grappelli, the French violinists. They were all major influences in arousing my curiosity about different styles of music, you know, apart from the traditional Irish stuff. So, and some of those tunes are some of that kind of stuff is reflected in the album that's been released, different styles of music. There's a bluegrass tune called Dragging the Bow, for example. That was a music I got curious about, and, you know, they have some very beautiful characteristics in it, like double stopping, you know, when you play two strings together. That's part of the character of the bluegrass stuff. But so Fritz Kreisler, Stephen Grappelli, Sean Maguire, they would be some of the early ones that I listened to.
You also have things in like Bert Kaempfert. Is that how it's pronounced?
Oh, Bert Kaempfert. Yeah, he was a German orchestra, mainly brass, some brass and some strings. And I remember when we were living in Raheny, we were only a couple of years married when we bought one of those records, and it has a great vitality, kind of sunshine, happy feel to the arrangements. Bert Kaempfert, yeah. Swingin' Safari was one of them, I think.
You also had Hank Williams in there. Wasn't Hank Williams more in the country genre?
That's right, yeah. I at one stage, I got attracted to Hank Williams and his songs, and I went off and I bought a guitar, cheapish guitar for myself, and taught myself how to play some of the basic chords and learn some of those songs. I just loved that whiny kind of a voice that Hank Williams had.
And then we have picked out, because we managed to get a clip out of something else, another genre, Glenn Miller Orchestra, In the Mood. Now, what attracted you to the Glenn Miller music?
Yeah, I think it was the syncopation, the sound of a brass ensemble all in perfect pitch and perfect harmony. Something very attractive about that sound. You've heard amateur brass and reed bands, I'm sure, going through a country town on a Sunday morning. And if they're not all dead on and tune, it can make a terrible racket altogether. But Glenn Miller had it to a T. Just the arrangements and the syncopation and the togetherness of all the musicians. Something very, very attractive about that.
Okay, let's hear a little bit of Glenn Miller's classic, In the Mood. Such energy and joy and life in that, John. What gets it for you? What's the best thing about that music for you?
I think it's I love the syncopation, you know, when you come in just a fraction of a second before the written note, da 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 da, that kind of a feel. I just love that feel in jazz. And the arrangements, of course, are superb. It will bring out all the beautiful harmonies that are possible with a brass ensemble like that.
Of course, with the Dubliners, you must have played thousands upon thousands of gigs during your career. But what about going to gigs yourself? Did you manage to get to many things yourself?
Yeah, here and there. One that I remember particularly well was, well, a couple that involved Stephen Grappelli. We were on a tour in the early 80s in Australia. We were playing in the city of Perth. And Stephen Grappelli was starting out on an Australian tour at the same time. He was staying at the same hotel. And he had a free night the night we were doing our concert, and he came along to the concert, and Luke and myself met him the next day. And he was intrigued. He really enjoyed the show, and he singled out my tin whistle playing for some reason. And he said, this is a wonderful instrument, so simple, and you're playing wonderful, wonderful music. So I accepted the compliment anyway. And later on that night, Luke is introducing my fiddle solo. And he's recounting this particular meeting with Stefan, except he distorts things in a very nice way. And he says, well, ladies and gentlemen, last night Stefan Grappelli was at our concert. We met him this morning. And I asked him, what did you think of our fiddle player? And Stefan said, oh, he plays the tin whistle so well.
You also saw him, I believe, at the National Concert Hall in the 1980s.
That's right. A couple of years later, he was in the National Concert Hall. And I brought the whole family along. We had three children at that time, Siobhan, Fiacra and Owen. And brought him along to the concert. And after the concert, it's something I normally wouldn't do, going backstage and, you know, when people are packing up and getting ready to go home. But I ventured backstage anyway and knocked on his dressing room door. And the man was tired, obviously, after the concert, but he had his coat and his hat on and he was just about to leave the dressing room. And anyway, we greeted each other and I reminded him. I said, I remember well, we met in Australia. And he went back into his dressing room, took off his overcoat and hung up his hat and sat down and talked to the children about music. And Owen was only about 4 or 5 at the time. He had him up in his lap talking to him. And what a wonderful gentleman, you know. It's an experience I'll never forget.
We have a little bit of him playing live. This is from San Francisco playing Sweet Georgia Brown. John, we're going to move away from music for this section and ask you about some of your other cultural favourites. And start, please, with the movies for me. Are you somebody who watches a lot of movies?
No, indeed. I'd say in my whole lifetime, I probably haven't seen more than about a dozen films or sat down to take stock of a film.
Why is that?
I'm not sure. I had a grand uncle down the country in County Limerick. And I think he influenced me as a young boy. He didn't approve of this modern thing like going to a cinema. And he said, John, sure, those old films, they're only old shadows on the wall. And I think that influenced me for a while until I got into my teenage years. And then, but I wasn't a regular cinema goer as such, you know. I used to go to the cartoon cinema and the Topographen Street there years ago. I enjoyed some of those simple cartoon films. But, yeah.
The one you've picked out for us, though, is a classic, Midnight Cowboy. Why did you remember this one?
Probably part of the reason is because I've gone to so few, that the few that I did go to stand out. But there was something special about that. John Voight and Dustin Hoffman were the two main characters in that one. John Voight was a cowboy from Texas, a swaggering cowboy who had great notions of his body, and then Dustin Hoffman, Enrico, he was a kind of a small-time gangster, shady New York fixer, and there was something about the development of the friendship between them that I thought was beautiful and beautifully played. A thing that I noticed about Dustin Hoffman, he was partially crippled. He had a very very lame. He went ran along with a limp. And it was so consistent. I was looking out for a slight falter when he might forget about this limp, but it never happened. But the most unlikely characters to build up a friendship with each other. The Texas Cowboy, he fancied himself as a male stud, and he was going to sell his body for sex to rich ladies in New York. And when he encountered Dustin kind of set himself up as an agent who would fix up meetings for him. But one of the first guys that he sent him along to, I think he turned out to be a kind of religious freak. He was admiring Dustin's body and stature and so on. And then he opened the toilet door, and here in the back of the toilet door was the picture of the Sacred Heart with flashing lights. And he was led up the garden path on that one and had a huge row with Dustin the next time they met.
We have a clip from that movie actually to play, and it includes the famous theme song from the movie, Everybody's Talking.
Hey, what's the matter?
I'm wet.
You're what?
I wet my pants, the seat's all wet.
Well, Ellie, he's crying over the damn thing.
Here I am going to Florida, my leg hurts, my butt hurts, my chest hurts, my face hurts. And like that ain't enough, I gotta pee all over myself. That's funny. I'm falling apart here.
You know what happened? You just took a little rest up. Wasn't on the schedule. Let me put you up here. Hey, what size paint you wear?
Everybody's talking, and I don't hear a word they're saying.
From Midnight Cowboy. John Sheehan is with us for the Culture Club this week. John, we asked you also to nominate a favourite play or show or musical. You gave us two. Start with Down and Out in Paris and London. Tell us about this, please.
Oh, that's based on a book of George Orwell's, Down and Out in Paris and London. And I went to a stage version of it that was devised by Phelim Drew. Ronnie's son, who is a wonderful actor. And he did this one-man show. It lasted about an hour and a quarter, and he acted all the various parts, his time in Paris, working in hotel kitchens and sleeping rough and all that kind of thing, and then moving to London and similar, meeting up with tramps and hobos and befriending them. And Phelim, he did an amazing one-man show based on that whole episode. And I was totally blown away by his memory for the whole script, nonstop for an hour and 20 minutes, where he portrayed all the various parts and filled in all the gaps in between. He was just a wonderful show.
You're also a big fan of Michael Harding's, and you have nominated him in two categories, the first one being for his part in the play John B. Keane's The Field.
That's right. That's only a couple of years ago. I've been a great fan of his writing for a few years now. I've read his last three books anyway. And his venture onto the stage, I think, was something new. He's written stage plays, all right. But to take the lead in as the Bull McCabe in The Field was something quite amazing to see. Absolutely brilliant, faultless acting and the way he portrayed the bull in all the scenes. So I was totally swept away by that. I met him afterwards and just told him I was at the show, and he said it was one of the toughest performances of his life on stage. But a wonderful, wonderful character, Michael.
He is, and you mentioned the books, which are so popular, and his column in the Irish Times is as well. We also know that when we have him as a guest on The Tonight Show on Virgin Media, he is enormously popular as well. But you've taken to his podcasts, I believe.
Yeah, podcasts are something new for me, Matt, but I did find a podcast of his, and it's just like a stream of consciousness. He's just sitting in his back porch, looking out and admiring the grass and the trees and the flowers and nature and the lake and the sky, and just wondering at all these and being thankful for all these wonderful gifts that we have that, you know, in our busy lifestyle nowadays, we're inclined to fly past and not take notice anymore. And I just love his free-flowing train of thought and some of these podcasts.
We also asked you for favourite books and authors. Do you read a lot?
Not a lot. When I was still living in Marino as a teenager, I joined the library in Marino, and you were given two cards in those days, a fiction card and a non-fiction. And to tell you the truth, I never actually used the fiction card. I used to take out books on woodwork and repairing car engines and metalwork and stuff like that, so that I neglected the other end of the spectrum with the fiction stuff. Did I mention a book? I did somewhere.
You gave us the Diving Bell. Tell us about that book. The Diving Bell and the Butterfly.
Yeah, The Diving Bell and the Butterfly. That was written by Jean. What was his name?
John Dominique Bobby.
He was a journalist. He was the main editor, I think, of a French magazine called Elle, E-double-L-E, which refers to a woman, I think. It means she or her or something like that. And he suffered a major stroke back in 96, 97. And it left him in hospital in a coma. When he got out of the coma, he discovered he had suffered what they called a locked-in syndrome, totally paralysed except for one part of his body, which was his left eyelid that he could blink with. And using that as a mechanism for writing a book, he devised, he rewrote the alphabet for his assistant, and he put the letters in the order of the frequency in which they occurred in the English language. So by that laborious means, he actually dictated this complete book. So if you can imagine the scene where he wants to start with, well, obviously the first word in a sentence, and his assistant is going E-S-A-R, and then he'll blink when he comes to the first letter of the first word. Then the same process again for the second letter, third letter, and so on until the word is complete. And can you imagine the labour that went into that? It took him about a year to write this beautiful book. They're really a collection of essays about his observations in the hospital and going down to the beach and all sorts of different fantasies. The butterfly bit, the diving bell represents the locked-in syndrome part, and the butterfly represents his brain. His brain was still very active and working perfectly. And the butterfly represented his fantasy of flights, if you like, going off to exotic places. But wasn't it an amazing thing to
absolutely. To John, we actually have a short extract from the audiobook of The Diving Bell and the Butterfly.
I had never even heard of the brain stem. I've since learned that it is an essential component of our internal computer, the inseparable link between the brain and the spinal cord. I was brutally introduced to this vital piece of anatomy on Friday, the 8th of December, 1995, when a cerebrovascular accident put my brain stem out of action. In the past, it was known as a massive stroke and you simply died, but improved resuscitation techniques have now prolonged and refined the agony. You survive. But you survive with what is so aptly known as locked-in syndrome. Paralyzed from head to toe, the patient is imprisoned inside his own body, his mind intact, but unable to speak or move. In my case, blinking my left eyelid is my only means of communication.
Wow, an extraordinary life sentence to have to serve.
Absolutely, and there's one story he tells where he got an infection in his right eye and they had to stitch it up. And he was absolutely terrified that the surgeon was going to do the same thing with his left eye, the only means of communication with the outside world, you know. And okay, yeah, he tells a beautiful story as well about people trying to predict what he was going to say. And he was looking for his reading glasses one day, and he was about to spell out the whole word lunette, L-U-N-E-T-T-E. Now, the first four letters, L-U-N-E, spell the word for the moon, loon. So when he got to the fourth letter, they were saying, what in the name of God does he want the moon for? And you can imagine the frustration. There he is lying motionless, listening to this nonsense, and he just wants to go ahead and spell the rest of the word, you know.
Extraordinary stuff. Unfortunately, we're out of time. John Sheehan, it has been great talking to you. Thank you very much for joining us here on The Last Word on Today FM. Flirting Fiddles is the first solo album at the age of 80. I hope, John, you're going to get an opportunity to actually go and perform it live when the lockdown finishes.
Yeah, hopefully, Matt. Yeah, I would have been doing a few gigs around the country with some of the people on the album at the moment, only for this terrible disaster that's hit the world. This silent, unseen enemy.
It's something to look forward to, though, for you, isn't it? To get out and start performing again at some stage.
Absolutely, yeah. It's in the blood. I'll be on to Colin McInomer and some of the boys on the record to do a few gigs together now as soon as this terrible thing is over.
We look forward to it. I'm sure everyone's looking forward to hearing you. John Sheehan, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us here on The Last Word at Today FM for The Culture Club.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.